Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
There's no sitting still for this veteran. He's a baker by day, gardener by night. Good luck keeping up with this gentleman. And get ready to have your mouth watering at the sounds of cheese twists, jalapeno fire tongues, and huckleberry muffins that he bakes at his German bakery called the Backstube Edelweiss in Arley, Montana. He also shares tips on growing in our challenging Montana climate and some money-saving ideas for extending your season with homemade hoop houses. So welcome to the show, Roy Mills, who is one of the farmers market directors down at the Arley Farmers Market. Go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself, Roy.
Well, you know, I'm a born native Montanan.
Cool.
Lived in Europe for 30 years. And then decided to come back to Montana.
Wow.
And yeah, it's been quite interesting. And in the time that I was in Europe and in Germany, I didn't do a lot of farming, but I knew a lot of old farmers that that were like in their 60s and 70s back then, and that was quite a few years ago. And they showed me a lot of simple but very effective, you know, gardening tips and stuff like that. And it's all has to do with simplicity. You know, the easier you make it, usually the better it is. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, when we came back to the States, I mean, this is the first year I've had a garden here.
Oh.
I have a bakery also. I hope you don't mind.
Yes. No, tell us about the bakery. You bet.
Yeah, well, the bakery got started because of Europe again, because I really missed their breads and pastries. So we started going to farmers market with baked goods, and then next thing I know, here I have a full-blown bakery for
awesome.
Our little community, which supports the community very well, and the community supports us very well. So, you know, it's kind of the same way it is with gardening, you know. It's one hand washes the other, and it's fun. I enjoy it. It's a lot of work, yes, but I think the proceeds are better. You know, they say you harvest what you sow. So that's, you know, you can use that probably in five different languages and come up with the same thing.
Cool.
But no, gardening to me is you know, everybody glorifies organic nowadays. And you know, they say you need to be organic certified through the agricultural department and pay all these fees and to get the certificate of being organic. You know, to me, if a person has a garden and it's their conscience that will let them say, yeah, either I'm organic or not. If I dump, you know, 40 gallons of chemical fertilizer on my garden to make it grow, then there's no way in the world I can say I'm organic. Mm-hmm. But if I take 5 pounds of chicken manure that's dried and crushed and powderized and put it on my garden, then yes, I can say, yeah, it's organic fertilizer. It's not chemical, it's organic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to me, organic is going back to the basics of life, mm-hmm. you know, keeping things neat. Weeds, yeah, weeds are a problem, and maybe your harvest ain't quite as big as Joe next door that's using Miracle-Gro and all this other stuff in his garden. But it's. I think it might probably taste better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So. You know,
Roy, I always kind of like to start out the show by asking my guest about your very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? You know, who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, tell us about are you from Arley? Like, is that where in Montana? You said you're a native from Montana. Is that where you're from?
No, actually, I was born and raised in a little town. Well, born in Kalispell.
Really?
And raised in a little town up between East and West Glacier called Essex.
Oh, wow. Okay. I know Essex very well.
And Essex was my very first gardening experience.
Oh.
I was probably maybe 8 years old. The only thing we had growing season time was a little bit of lettuce and radishes.
Oh, uh-huh.
That's about the only thing you could grow up there. That's about the only thing that we grew.
That would probably have to be the most challenging place I've talked to anybody yet. So if listeners don't know, Essex is on the way to the pass between West Glacier and East Glacier. You kind of go underneath Glacier National Park. And it's about, what, 20 miles east of West Glacier. And it's just, there's a lot of snow in the winter. A lot of snow.
Yeah, it's the growing season is usually maybe from the first part of June to maybe the end of August. Mm-hmm. That's about it. Mm-hmm. If you have that long of a period, you know, if you're not getting your crop eaten by deer or something else. But no, that was, you know, it's almost dead center between East and West Glacier on Highway 2, mm-hmm. which is a fun highway, but it's got a lot of beautiful scenery. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my very first gardening experience. Horseradish grows really well up there.
Oh.
And rhubarb.
Mm-hmm.
But gardening itself was basically just radishes and lettuce. And then in the early 70s, early to mid 70s, we moved down to West Valley, there in Kalispell, outside of Kalispell.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then we went from a little garden in Essex to a garden down there that was probably 20 by 80.
Oh, wow.
Something like that. Yeah, so we went really big. And that was then more of the family, more from necessity than pleasure, because, you know, we were a pretty good-sized family, and times back in the 70s were pretty hard.
That's,
so then we started.
Go ahead.
Then we started the garden, and you know, my stepdad was the one that was kind of the instigator of it all, and unfortunately, as kids, had to do all the work. So that's the way it was back in the 70s, you know.
Yeah, my husband was moved up here in the 60s, and he went to junior high here. That's a lot of like where his you know, upbringing was from. Like, and I talk to listeners a lot about, like, canning's just like a natural thing for him, and he bakes a lot because his mom always baked cookies. They had four boys, so, you know, and then that was their thing. They, you know, he always had to milk cows when he was growing up, and they had a big ranch, and so the boys were always working. So, yep. I've heard a lot about those days around here, for sure.
But yeah, you know, and that's, you know, and then when I went to Europe, joined the military, went to Europe, that's where I started. Well, I had a little garden, but it wasn't really big. I didn't really have a lot of time to do anything in it, but I talked to a lot of the older generation Germans after learning the language, and was learning all the different type of natural Naturquidia is what they call it in German. I'm trying to figure out what I'd call it in English. Hemopathic, I guess, hemopathic. Natural medicines, you know, herbs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. What different herbs do to you, you know, what you can do mm-hmm. with them, how to make tea out of them and stuff like that. And I had this older gentleman that lived next to me that I was cutting my grass one day, and he come over, and I didn't speak German very well, and he was just going crazy on me because I was cutting this rare herb that only grows, found out later, on really bad soil and bad gardens that usually, you know, like in alley, almost in an alleyway or just really, really bad soil. And this stuff was just growing like crazy, and it was called a Blaue Nutterkopf.
Oh,
and it's a natural herb that they use for blood thinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just mowing it over with the lawnmower. This guy, he just went crazy. So after that, he came over to my yard one day. I came home from work, and he was in my yard, and he had all these little fence things, and he was putting them all over these, around these different bushes, you know, these lumps of grass. And I'm going, what are you doing? And he said, oh, don't cut. This is this, and this is that. And then he actually took the time and wrote little
like tag, name like tags?
Little cards. Put on there and what the German name was, what the botanical name was, and what it was used for. That, but oh my God, what I got here. I got a nature's a druggery. What do I have? A nature's druggery in my backyard. He said it kind of looks like it. So I learned a lot, and I got a bunch of books on it and was reading it, and there's some really interesting things.
Wow. That's amazing.
But it was an experience, and they, you know, showed me how to do different things and how to use different other plants. For example, I know he was using stinging nettle. Uh-huh. He would take stinging nettle and soak it in water, not cook it or anything, just soak it in water. And then use the water, the brine from it, to spray the plant leaves if he had mites or stuff like that on it.
Oh, really?
And it worked. Yeah. So it was quite interesting. And then he would take the solid mass from the stinging nettle, and he would kind of pulverize it and use it as a fertilizer.
Oh, cool.
So.
And there's lots of stinging nettle in Montana, right? We have a lot of that here, right?
Oh, yeah. We got stinging nettle all over the place around here. But this gentleman, though, he could actually reach into stinging nettle barehanded and it wouldn't even bother him.
Oh, you're kidding.
Don't ask me why. I have no idea.
Huh. You'd think he would get swollen up and infected.
What was that?
I said you'd think he would have got, like, all swollen up and infected.
No, he had no problem whatsoever. He, I don't know what it was. He said it just never bothered him. And I don't know. He said if you do it in the months that don't have R in it, you're good to go.
Oh, so like June and July,
I don't know what they are. I don't know what the R has to do with it.
But not in the fall, no September, October, Novembers that all have R's at the end. So you got to do it like when it's soft, and kind of like dandelions, you know. Dandelions are, you know, so good to eat, but then when they get kind of prickly at the end of the year. So maybe mm-hmm. that maybe gets pricklier with the at the in the fall. Tell us something that grew well this year, or something that's growing well right now.
Actually, my radishes were growing so well they all went woody on me.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They went fast this year, really, didn't they?
They did. The heat is just, they shoot, they get seeds real quick. My spinach, I had a really hard time trying to keep it down to where it would produce good spinach leaves because of the heat again and the water.
Yep. Ours just bolted fast.
My arugula salad went crazy on me, and it's already gone to seed, so I'm going to go ahead and just let it keep going, and then I'm going to keep the seed and dry it and plant it, use it next year to plant so I don't have to buy any.
Mm-hmm. You know, my arugula went to seed, but I'm still eating it. It's still pretty fresh and tastes pretty good. And some of the newer leaves that are a little bit tinier are really nice. And it's totally bolted. The spinach, not so much. I can't really eat that, but my arugula is still pretty tasty.
Yeah. See, I don't have a greenhouse. I did everything this year. I planted my first rows of lettuce in the first day of April.
Uh-huh.
And I took made me little hoop houses, little hoops, mm-hmm. and put some really nice thick foil over top of the hoops, and it grew. For our first farmer's market that we had here in April, in the first of May, I was the only one that had salad. I had lettuce like you wouldn't believe. I had the arugula, the spring mix, and a regular leaf lettuce that was just amazing.
Now, wait, what did you say you put over the hoops?
Well, I took a real thin backing material from a piece of scrap wood from, I think it was like Home Depot or something, and I cut strips about an inch and a half wide, and soaked them, and then bent them, you know, made little hoops out of them.
Uh-huh.
And a friend of mine has these big hoop garden, or these big hoop houses, these like greenhouses.
Uh-huh.
And he had some extra foil laying around, you know, plastic foil or covering.
Oh.
It's a little bit heavier. It's heavier than the stuff you can buy at the at the box stores.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually made for greenhouses. And I stapled a couple of boards to each side of it so I could roll it up easy and take it off if it was getting too hot or whatever. And I just draped it over these hoops.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Like a little mini greenhouse.
Nice.
If you wanted to go onto our website for our farmer's market, there's actually pictures.
Okay, cool.
These little hoops that I made, and it worked great, because like I said, even though we was having some really bad weather, you know, cold nights in April and May, my stuff never froze at all.
Excellent. And I love that idea about like getting the kind of scrap wood and bending it, putting in water and making it pliable and bending it. That's awesome. That's great. I tip for listeners to try something like that. So it doesn't have to be super expensive.
Yeah, the best stuff to use if you can get it is like maybe a 16th inch plywood works really good because you know, a 5 millimeter plywood works really good because you can soak it in water and it makes it nice and pliable.
And I really like that better than PVC pipe. That sounds way better than PVC pipe, which people are always using.
I guess
I don't really know.
And these little hoop houses these little hoops that I made, they're like maybe 18, 20 inches off the ground. So it keeps everything down to where, you know, it keeps the warmth right there.
Excellent.
You know, I'm heating up in the daytime. But no, it was good. It was good. And let's see, I got cabbage growing this year already. I just actually had to look into one of my cabbage because I thought I got hit by the cabbage butterfly, that cabbage moth.
Right.
So yeah, I was looking to make sure. And then I found out today from a friend of mine, because I pulled the center out and looked at it, and it was still good. And he says, well, leave the root stock in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it's too late. And he says, well, he had a cabbage root stock that grew cabbage 3 years in a row. He didn't even take them out. He just left him in there. And he said, next thing, the first year he had nice big heads.
Uh-huh.
Didn't take them out. But the next year he had like three heads per cabbage, per cabbage plant. But
nice.
They were smaller, more, but really sweet and tender.
Mm-hmm.
And he still didn't take them out. He said on the third year, he said he got another crop off of the same rootstock.
I had a guest on who was talking about doing that, but he just cut the cabbage off and then he got more small ones that same year. But then he didn't say anything about leaving it in the ground through the winter and it coming up again the next year. That's a great idea because then it's going to get more climatized. And he also said that those other ones were more tender. The second batch were kind of almost a better tasting cabbage. Cool.
Yeah,
I like these tips.
I'm gonna try that with the ones that I, because I pulled that one out. I didn't know any better at the time, so I pulled it. But the rest of them, I'm going to leave it in there, and probably this winter, I'll just probably cover them with one of them little hoop houses things that I make, and cover them up to protect it a little bit, see what happens.
Yeah, and a lot of people have been saying that the biggest thing that a hoop house will do through the winter is protect it from the wind and from drying out. I've had a few guys talk about that.
I think that's probably right now, well, here in Montana, the temperatures are just amazing. I don't remember a June or a July this hot, dry. You know, the winds are crazy. It's dried everything out so bad.
I know, right? I don't remember ever seeing wind like this year.
No, I can't either. I can't. you know.
And I've been teaching over Browning the last 4 years. And I still think the wind has been crazier this year than usual.
Yeah, yeah. You know, living up there in Essex, we didn't have a lot of wind. And then down in West Valley, there was some. But, like, right here in the Jocko Valley is where I'm living now. Mm-hmm. And it's just hot, dry, the wind's blowing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's terrible.
We've had wind up here in Eureka that I've never seen before this year. And they just banned all the fireworks I don't know if they have in Flathead yet, but like Whitefish up here in Lincoln County, they banned them for the 4th of July, and which I'm so thankful. We got it well in water this year, and we're just having a heck of a time already keeping our place wet and, you know, the fire danger down, just trying to keep green around our house. So, and I'm like, it's only June. What's it going to be like in August? I don't know. I just keep my fingers crossed we might get some rain.
I'm hoping.
Knock on
wood. They've actually banned fireworks down here on the reservation.
Good.
The first time since.
Yeah, I'm glad. I like fireworks for New Year's. I think in Montana, we should have fireworks at New Year's and not for the 4th of July anyway. Because it's like, by the time it gets dark, everyone's in bed, you know, by midnight or, I don't know. Yeah. I just like them better in the snow. It's safer. I don't have to worry about my neighbors starting a fire and, you know, playing with the little fireworks that don't know, or tourists coming that have no idea, you know, they don't know. And just, I think fireworks should be in the winter. But that's me. I mean, I guess the 4th of July is the 4th of July. You leave it for the big places. I saw that Whitefish Lake has a plan to make sure their barge doesn't blow up, was in the front page of the paper last night. I guess their barge of fireworks has blown up the last 2 years in a row.
Oh no!
So they have a plan this year. Anyway, Roy, tell us about something you're excited to try new, or something you're excited to try different.
Well, I want to try to grow lettuce all year round.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm gonna have to check back with you next year and see how that goes. Go ahead and tell us.
Yeah, I have a friend that did it last year in a hoop house. And I have a friend that lives real close to the bakery that we're really good friends, and he has from them hoop hounds that he had, and we're going to see if we can get lettuce and beets.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And what was the other one? I can't remember. I think carrots, and there was something else that we were going to see if we can get it to grow. Good. But he in his hoop houses, he has the full climated hoop houses with heating and ventilation, and he's got really nice houses.
As far as I'm going,
we can get...
go ahead.
He usually grows tomatoes in his houses, but the market for tomatoes, it's still there. He grafts his tomatoes on a different stock than the original tomato was. And for some reason this year, he had really, really bad problems with mites, and he couldn't get rid of them. Mm. But he's done well. I think from the 600 plants that he's had, he was able to save like 80.
Oh.
So it hurt him bad.
Those mites. So they're tough once they get in there to get rid of those.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, it was because of the weather, the spring, the way the weather was. It was hot and dry, and that's perfect climate for mites to go crazy on, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, but that's the reason we decided we're going to see if we can get the lettuce thing going and some of these other, and then the cabbage. We're going to see if we can get the cabbage growing.
Cool.
Next year in my garden, I think the only thing I might do different is I might rearrange a little bit and grow peas and beans and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't do this year because of mismanagement, I guess, not knowing where to plant certain things. And you don't plant your peas and your beans because they're stock. You don't plant them on the west side of your garden. So you always put them on the east side because they'll... when they get high enough, then they block all the sun that goes, you know, from the afternoon. So, yeah, I kind of mismanaged the planting of my garden this year. So,
all right.
I'll get it together next year.
This girl that I interviewed, Megan Kane from the Creative Vegetable Gardener in Michigan, has a really good book on, and she has a lot of diagrams on her website about how to be strategic and plan your diagram. And then there was another woman, Angie Schneider from Schneider Peeps down in Texas, who also has a great plan your garden journal. So those might be some resources that might help you plan your garden a little. But that's important. I'm glad you brought that up. So listeners think, because sometimes you get home from the, you know, either the nursery or the seed store, like I did in February with like tons of seeds. And then you just kind of go crazy and put everything in the ground. And then the next thing you know, you've got overwhelm. Or who else was I talking to? Judy Hoysock was talking about getting like a little over ambitious and thinking, oh, there's so much room because there's lots of, and not leaving enough space for everything to grow. And then she kind of got, things were overwhelmed and growing together. So I think that's a great tip for listeners, to make sure you plan your garden well and think about, where's the sun going to be? Where's the sun going to be, you know, at the end of the summer as compared to the beginning of the summer? Because already, even like last night, I saw the full moon had moved quite a bit. And the sun, and the sun's already shifting kind of down south a little bit further from where it was at the beginning of the summer. I've been noticing on our potato plants. How about something that you find is easy to grow and generally successful every time?
It's easy to grow and successful. I would probably have to say the easiest thing to grow and successfully would be radishes. But there's not a, you know, there's a market actually for radishes. Another thing that's easy to grow, as long as you keep it kind of cleaned out, is lettuce.
And is there a kind of lettuce that you like the best? I like that black seeded Simpson. Although Mike grew some butternut or something lettuces that I like, I can't remember what they're called.
I found, like, at our farmer's market, everybody really, really likes either the arugula. This is an easy lettuce to grow. And the spring mix.
Oh, yeah.
With the, it has the darker leaf and the lighter leaf in it, you know?
I've never had good luck growing that spring mix myself. I just don't get
You've never had...
I haven't had good luck with it. Like, you know, it just seems like it comes up few and far between for me, whereas that black-seeded Simpson just works really well. That's what I've had the most luck with myself. But.
Yeah, I have actually two rows of that black seed leaf lettuce growing, and it's doing very well. Both rows are. Matter of fact, I'm going to probably harvest half of it tomorrow morning at about 2 o'clock, because that's the best time. You know, if you're not supposed to harvest your lettuce in the heat of the day, because it just wilts almost immediately.
At like 2 o'clock in the morning, like you're going to go out there right after midnight and go harvest your lettuce?
Yeah, because I'll probably be going from, let's say not 2 o'clock, I'd say 3 o'clock, because I'll be out cutting my lettuce, getting it ready to bring down to wash it, because I got to be at my bakery at 4 so I can start baking for the day. So yeah, I got long days.
You're a busy man.
I try to stay busy.
At least it's cooler when you go out there in the middle of the night. Something that you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow around here? Anything that you feel is like really difficult?
Not really. Yeah, kind of. Cabbages, any type, you know, like a cabbage or broccoli.
Cool, I'm glad you said that, because when you were talking about the cabbages, I was thinking, they're kind of hard. They've been hard, and they get the worms in them. I was wondering about how it would last through.
Yeah. Well, you know, that gentleman that I knew in Germany, he kind of gave me a tip that and I'm not sure how it's going to affect. He said if you take cigarette tobacco, And soak it. The nicotine will keep the bugs away.
Okay.
I didn't do it. He did it all the time. And he used his cabbage for making some really good German sauerkraut. And it was some of the best sauerkraut I ever ate in my life. But I'm kind of afraid to do it because I'm not sure what it would do. I'm concerned about the moth, you know, getting the worms into it. And, but any kind of broccoli, cauliflower, any kind of a kohl type, you know, cabbage type plant, you know, they're a lot of work to keep them clean, to keep the mites out of them and the bugs and the worms and stuff like that. But I think I'm going to probably take half of a row and try that with the nicotine, with the juice, and see how it works out. Cause he swore by it. He said it was the best thing to use it, and he was an old natural, you know, back in Second World War, they didn't have a lot of all the chemicals were used for other reasons.
Right.
And the farmers got stuck with you know, trying to figure out how to do things and still feed, you know, 2/3 of the population.
Right.
And, yeah, so that's what they was doing. So.
Well, maybe if you stuck with like a natural, like a rolling tobacco, like American Spirit or Drum or something that's like, you know, not maybe as toxic as like pulling apart Marlboros or something, you know, like a rolling tobacco might go a little better. I don't know. Part of me is like, is that like putting cancer stuff into the ground? But then I don't know. Like people have been talking about that diomaceous earth or whatever that you can sprinkle on caterpillars. I did see a really good article this weekend I sent to a friend of mine about taking eggshells and you kind of bake them in the oven or just make sure they're super dried out. Maybe leave them out in the sun in this weather and then crushing them up in your blender. And that they were it was I guess that's kind of a good way to sprinkle to get rid of the beetles. So I don't
know. Well, yeah, it would probably be from the remaining of the egg white, which would turn into a, like almost like a sulfur type substance, if I'm not mistaken, because the egg white is nothing but pure protein anyway.
Oh,
So that would, yeah, it could. It could and just make like a paste almost type supper, you know, just.
I don't know. We have something eating our peppers. And so Mike, I had read that he remembered somebody had mentioned that. And so then I looked it up. And so he put a bunch of eggshells. I saw him in a paper bag. He's going to try it, I think, down on our peppers and see if that helps. Because something's eating our peppers like crazy. They're doing the weirdest thing I've ever seen them do this year. They have like something ate all the big leaves. And so now there's like all these tiny, smaller leaves clumped around the stem. And it's really weird because there's like three or four of these giant leaves sticking out. But then there's all this new growth right around the stem. I've never seen pepper plants do that. And I was looking at them this morning thinking, this is weird.
Well, you know, we had something go through through our town. It was really weird because when they rerouted the road here in town, they had put these bushes. I'm not sure what they're called, what type of bushes they are, along the highway going through town.
Uh-huh.
You know, to beautify and everything, and then it did. But this year, I went out this spring and cut them all back and cleaned them up and shaped them a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And let's see, well, it must have been, the first part of May, middle of May, you know, they was getting their foliage on them, their leaves and everything. They was looking beautiful and everything. And I went out one day, and they were gone.
The bushes?
All the leaves were gone.
Oh, bizarre.
Like something ate. You know, and I thought maybe the deer had been wandering through town.
Uh-huh.
But it was just, and it was only that one kind of bush, and they were totally naked. The whole town on both sides of the road.
Wow.
And that one type of bush was totally naked. But now they're back.
I've never
seen anything like it. And I was talking to this friend of mine, David, and we was looking at it, and he was totally stumped, too. He couldn't figure out what it is, but we was looking at it the other day, and they looked just as beautiful as before whatever ate them.
Huh.
Because the stalk was green, you know, the stem was green, but there was no leaves on it.
But you don't think it was the deer?
No, because the deer would have ate the whole stem all the way down.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But they just took the leaves right off.
So it's like a little bug. Weird.
Yeah,
huh.
Something. I don't know, but they're back now and they're beautiful. So,
Cool. Well, that's good to know. How about, do you have an activity that's like your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Something you just got to force yourself to get out there?
Weeding.
Weeding? Okay.
Weeding. I have to force myself to go out and weed. I let the weed. But, you know, I guess that's part of being a, what do you call it, a hucko, trying to figure out what hucko has called in English. I speak better German than I do English, actually.
Well, it sounds like you've lived there for quite a while.
Well, hucko, it would be your environmental safe, you know, type thing. You know,
uh-huh.
And I guess that's part of it, I guess, trying to be as natural as possible and not use herbicides and pesticides and all that stuff in your garden to kill all these unwanted weeds. Mm-hmm. Because usually you kill more than just that.
I know,
but
right?
But no, weeding is probably my biggest enemy. I just, yeah.
How about your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Watch it grow. Knowing that it's growing and it's doing well.
Mm-hmm. Lots of my guests say that.
What's that?
Lots of my guests say that. Spending time in the garden, getting to see everything growing.
Yep. Walking out there and just saying, you know, God, it's just, you know, I've put a lot of pictures on my Facebook site for our farmer's market, and people are just, you know, oh, how did you do that? I have no idea. You know, it just grows, you know. And the plot of ground I picked to put my garden, my space, is actually under an old laundry line.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that had something to do with it, because, you know, back in the old days, they used a lot of phosphate in their laundry detergents. Well, they still do, but not near as bad as it was. So I was wondering if maybe the phosphates, you know, got into it and kind of, because even before I put my garden in there, that part of the yard was always nice and green and looking good. So maybe that was it. I don't know. But no, that doesn't mean go out. No, that doesn't mean go out and pour phosphate or laundry detergent drop, you know, powder on your garden. I don't know if that would be a good idea.
Nope. I wouldn't think so. How about the best gardening advice you've ever received?
The best gardening advice I've ever received. The one I got just the other day, don't pull your rootstock or your cabbage.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and if your radishes shoot, pull them. Just take them out, because they ain't going to be no good anyway.
Oh.
But other than that, no, the best gardening advice I ever got was from David yesterday, and when I told him, or actually this morning, when I told him about, you know, that cabbage plant, and he said, well, just leave the ripstock, see what happens.
Cool.
Too late, or to threw it away.
Well, you probably have more cabbages growing, right?
Oh, yeah. So the next ones I'm going to leave even after the cabbage is big enough to harvest, mm-hmm. I'm going to leave the rootstock. I was thinking about maybe trying that with the, the broccoli. Let's see what happens there. I don't know.
I don't know, but we definitely have a broccoli that, you know, after you pick the main head, we'll put lots of little heads out, kind of in the same way. And then you can get, like, a lot of overgrowth if you just cut the stalk of the broccoli and not pull the whole plant out when you harvest it. And then we'll get a lot of those little shoots afterwards.
So I'm going to try that and see what happens.
Cool. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what would you take?
The one tool would probably be my spade.
Uh-huh.
I have a spade that it's amazing. It's stainless steel, probably 6 inches across the bottom and about 16 inches high. Uh-huh. That's probably what I would take, because with that there, I can make my garden as big as I want, and I can make a garden anywhere I want it to.
Cool.
And it's one of them spades that it would never. No, I've had that spade now. I brought it with me from Germany. That's how well
you did.
I like it.
All right.
Yeah, that would probably be the one item I would take anywhere and everywhere I go.
I like that. How about, do you have a favorite internet resource or something that you really, someplace you go on the web to get information about gardening?
Nope.
How about a favorite?
No journals, no books, no nothing. I just, me and David, we converse a lot. He has a lot of places that he goes to. Okay. I don't, I probably should, but I really don't have the time. I'm kind of one of them gardeners that, I'm going to invest time into it. I'm going to make sure that it gets plenty of water, plenty of sun, the necessary fertilizer, chicken manure is probably the best. But you got to be very careful, because if you make it too hot, it'll just fry everything. So very little of the chicken manure. Stay away from cow and horses, because you never know where the hay came from that they've eaten.
Excellent.
I like to do things on my own, I guess, kind of more than anything.
And it kind of sounds like you learned a lot when you were over in Europe, and then you've talked to a lot of different gardeners. So it sounds like, you when you need to know something, you kind of like go out and reach out to other gardeners and get your information, which is one of the best ways to learn.
Yeah.
Because especially you're going to get local advice and somebody who's been right here that's done it. How about, are you ready for my final question? Wait, do you want to tell us about your bakery a little?
My bakery yeah. is, it's called Backstube Edelweiss. Huh? And it's a European name. The Edelweiss is a flower, is an alpine flower. Oh. And the word Backstube, translated into English, would be a baker's nook, because it's really small. My bakery is probably the smallest bakery you've ever seen in your life. It's 10 feet wide and 20 feet long.
Oh, my goodness.
And I bake everything you can imagine in there, from black quartz cakes to Frankfurter Kranzkuchen, Donauwelle, all different kinds of breads. We do the traditional German rye breads that are, they're famous, European famous. We do puff pastries. We do cream puffs, cinnamon rolls, because that's an American staple. and I experiment a lot. I like in the mornings when I and I oh and I do a. A cheese tongue, that's what we call it. In German, it's called a Käsezunge, and the direct translation into English would be a cheese tongue, and it's the same dough as for a Kaiser roll.
Oh.
And I roll them to where they're a little bit longer than a Kaiser. I roll them up to where they're long, almost like a hot dog bun, not quite as long, but and then I cut them open, and I put bacon and cheese on them, and then I bake them. And then we have one with bacon, cheese, and jalapeno, and we call that the fire tongue.
Oh,
they're,
nice!
They're really tasty. Yeah, they're really tasty. And I had a gentleman stop in that was down in Las Vegas, and he went to a German bakery because he eats my pastries and everything, and he really likes them. And he said, I just had to try, Roy. He said, don't be offended. And I said, dear man, why should I be offended? You have the right to sample just like everybody else does. He says, well, the only thing that I found down there that you don't have that was what they call a cheese twist. And I know how to do them. I've made them before. I just around here, and it's basically the same thing as the cheese tongue, but it's folded over and twisted more like a, almost like a Danish type twist type thing, with cheese in it, and then they're covered with sesame seeds, poppy seeds, and they're very tasty. So I made him some, and now it's become part of my staples because everybody that's eaten them, we just, this one guy said, you need to take these to the UM. You know, I just,
right?
Yeah, it would probably be a good place to go, except it probably cost me more money to get into there than it would, you know, to you know, it would, probably wouldn't be worth it. But anyway, so we just stayed local with all of our stuff. I go to a couple of different farmers markets. I've experimented making different types of bread. I make a molasses bread that's really good.
Ooh.
I make a Picasso bread.
What's
and
that?
It got its name because I use the sweet dough from the cinnamon rolls and the regular dough from like a Kaiser roll or from the cheese tongue that's left over, and I knead them together, and but not totally knead them together, so they're a little bit separated, but when they raise, then I bake it. And because of the sweet dough, the sugar in the sweet dough caramels faster than the regular one, that when you toast it, it looks like you have some kind of a weird abstract painting in front of you. And that's the reason we call it a Picasso
bread.
Oh, cool.
But
it's very unique. And it's got a good flavor to it. And you can make really good French toast with it, or you can just make sandwiches with it, or whatever, you know, your heart desires. And it's actually one of the things that you know, along with my rye breads that sell really good. So it's fun. It's quite interesting.
So what are your hours in case I make it down to Arlie and get through there? Do you close early, or like what's your hours if you're in there at 4:30 in the morning?
Well, we open the door at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we're here until 5 in the afternoon.
Wow. Okay. You heard that, listeners. If you're down around Arlie, make sure you go in and see his bakery.
Except for our Fridays, we're open until 7.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Well, we have during the summer months, we have the farmer's market here in the same complex as we have the bakery.
Oh, cool. Good to know.
So it's anywhere from a 12 to a 16 hour day on Fridays. So it's fun.
Cool.
And it's, you know, the farmers markets, I think, are one of the better little marketing things we expect, especially for people that have little gardens that are experimenting and wanting to learn. Because if you want information, people, just go to your farmers market and talk to the vendors that are there that have the tomatoes and the eggplant and all that other beautiful, you know, veggies that are there. They can give most of them, in the smaller communities, most of your vendors will be so helpful in giving you tips of how to grow this or how to grow that. I would say I don't want to knock the big cities and stuff, but I'm not a fan of big city farmers markets.
I think it depends because, like, my mom lives, you know, like 20 miles outside of New York City. But because she's on Long Island, there's actually so many farmers markets that they're actually pretty small. And, you know, you can actually talk to quite a few farmers at where she is located. It's not so bad because there's such a... there's such a big population. You can have so many different farmers markets that the one that I know my mom goes to that's closest to her house just has, like, I don't even think there's a dozen vendors. And my parents have always gotten to talk to the gardeners pretty much.
That would then be, again, you know, like going into a small community, you know, like Arlie or Eureka, you know, and getting, you know, talking to the vendors. But now if you go into a bigger city, like, you know, I don't want to knock Missoula because Missoula is a beautiful state or town or city, you know, but some of the vendors in there are very, very, you know, I'm not going to give you away my secrets because you might put me out of business.
Oh, really?
Type thing, you Yeah.
No, I think the thing I've learned the most from doing this podcast and talking to other people is that for a farmer's market to really thrive, that everybody's got to look at it as we're all in it together. And if we, you know, what makes a farmer's market is having the variety and having different vendors. So you can't really, shouldn't really look at it as competition. I've heard quite a few of my guests have said that. And then when I was down in Missoula, I talked to some people at the market there, and I think that's, you know, just something people have to think about. And actually, one of my guests talked about like having an anchor farm. And if you lose your anchor farm at your market, you're going to really struggle. So I think those vendors should think about, not worry about the competition, and think about there's enough for everybody. I'm kind of like one of those people that believes in a theory of abundance rather than scarcity.
Yeah, well, see, we just started this farmer's market this year. There used to be at a different location here in town, and I took over the market management. Well, me and two other people, we have actually a market board now, and you know, we all think the same way. You know, we're all in this boat together, people. We're here to help the community. The community should, you know, be part of what we're doing, and because one hand does wash the other. You know, and it's really hard, especially, you know, if you have somebody that comes, like we have a couple of vendors that in the beginning were coming from Missoula. Well, I'm not making enough money. I can't, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not only about making money. It's about being, you know, consistent with being here. You know, if people don't know you're going to be there next week, then they're not going to come next week.
Yeah.
And you might be here and they might not. So it's kind of a, you know, one week might be good, next week might be bad type thing. But you never know unless you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we have the vendors that we have here are really good people. We enjoy them. They enjoy coming to our market. We have a variety of things. We have, you know, produce as well as handcrafted. We're really pushing a lot of upcycling. I'm not sure if that is a term that you're familiar with.
Go ahead and tell the listeners, just in case some people don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with the terminology of upcycling until probably 3 months ago. And what they do is they take like old whatever that people would think are, you know, junk or trash or whatever, but do something a little bit different to it. Maybe repaint it, put a little extra, whatever onto it or whatever, and make it new again, you know, turn a window into a picture frame or make an old window and put some of that window paint stuff on it, make it like look like the most, you know, a stained glass window. And that's what upcycling is. And people around here are really going for it. Well, and they're loving it. I have this lady that makes solar lights or solar lamps with out of upcycling. We'll have it on our Farmers Market Facebook tomorrow, pictures of them, and they're really unique.
Cool. So, all right, I'll put the links to that in the show notes.
Yeah.
So people can see the pictures. Cool.
Anything else for you?
Yep. Ready for my final question?
I guess so.
It's a doozy. If there was one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel, Roy, is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
That sounds really political, lady. I think I'm going to stay off of that one.
Nothing?
That's a political thing. There's so much that people themselves can do. Be more wise of what you're doing. Be more respectful of what you're doing to our forests, to our lands. And remember, it's not yours. It's the generation behind you, your kids, your great-great-great-grandchildren, you know? And if you kill it now, what are they going to have? Leave something behind that your children and children and children can inherit and continue on with. That's all I got to say on that matter.
Well, I love that answer. That's perfect. That is absolutely one of my favorite answers. I think that's exactly what I was looking for. So how about an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into that dirt and start their own garden?
A good motivate is, you know, if you grow it, turn your neighbors on to it. Let your neighbors, if you have neighbors that have never eaten a fresh-grown cucumber or a fresh-grown carrot or head of cabbage, take some of your produce and take it to your neighbors, you know. And people, it doesn't make a difference who they are or what they are or whatever. You know, we're all in this thing together.
We
got to do it together, you know. That's the only thing I would say is the fulfillment, the satisfaction of being able to give a total stranger something good is amazing. I think it is anyway. But that's me. Is that
Roy,
good enough for you?
You have been an amazing guest today. You have shared just lots of great knowledge, lots of tips, stuff from Europe and Germany and you know, successful things that are happening here and there. And I love your ambition and your just positive attitude. And I'm definitely going to come check out your bakery. I hope listeners will come check out your bakery. So tell listeners how to connect with you. Like, should they find you on Facebook? Is that what you told me? That is on Facebook?
We have a Facebook page. It's a page. And it's under Buckstube.
Okay.
Buckstube is spelled BACKSTUBE. And it's in Arlee. We're out in the middle of nowhere, basically, and people are surprised we had a German couple stop in here yesterday, and they were just, I've been traveling all over America and have never found a German, you know, and here we come to this little tiny town in the middle of nowhere, and we have a German bakery just like home. So,
aww.
Yeah, it's a surprise. It's a pleasant surprise. And we give out good tourist information, and it's just it's like going into grandma's kitchen. that's what it's kind of like, going into grandma's kitchen and smelling fresh baked bread coming out of the oven or fresh cinnamon rolls. You know, and there's always something fresh coming out of the oven. So
awesome. Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much for spending some time and talking with me today and sharing your knowledge with our listeners. And do you want to say goodbye?
Yeah, definitely. People of whoever listened to this, thank you for your time. And I hope I give you the right type of information. And, you know, let's all do it together. All right. See you later.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. Thanks again for listening, and grow local.